The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello friends, I'm your host, Chris Thrall. I'm a former Royal Marines Commando. I've adventured, for better and sometimes worse, across 80 countries on all 7 continents. Welcome to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. Hello friends, and welcome to another episode of the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. I'm your host, Chris Thrall, former Royal Marines Commando. And today, I have the pleasure of talking about parachuting and skydiving with my good friend down there in Cairns in Australia, Graham Bint. Graham, how are you?
Hey, good day, Chris. Excellent, mate. Excellent. Yourself?
Yes. Yes. Yes, nothing more needs to be said. I always try and be fine, to be honest, and I normally manage it.
You always are, mate. It's always good talking to you. Thanks for inviting me back as well. Sorry I'm not wearing a T-shirt today, but it's 28 degrees here at 6 o'clock in the evening. Sorry about that.
It's all right. They say you're excused rig, don't they?
Well, I'm in tropical uniform, shorts and a singlet, or vest, as you call them in the UK. That's all I got. I got some Brill cream today to just for special for you.
It reminds me of looking at you sat there. Reminds me. Do you remember It Ain't Half Hot, Mum?
Shut up.
For our young friends watching, Google It Ain't Half Hot, Mum. If you want good old British casual racism, that's your baby.
Isn't it sad they didn't, you know, that they didn't grow up with that military humour and.
So
foundation. Yeah.
Graham, can you just, in your own words, so I don't screw it up, introduce what your military background consisted of?
Sure. because the subject's parachuting, I did my first parachute jump on my 16th birthday because I'd been chomping at the bit to throw myself out of the sky for some strange reason. And I was in a club. The guy who run the club was Ted. I forget his second name, but he was a Red Devils instructor. That was wonderful. So when I decided that I was going to join the military, as we do, I wanted to join as a paratrooper. I always wanted to get my wings. Always wanted to be airborne. And so at 17, I managed to, you know, I went down the RAF careers office to join the RAF regiment because it was just after the Falklands, 1993, and the queue for the para reg was round the block 8 times. So I went and joined the RAF regiment because I'd been in the air cadets and I had family in the RAF regiment. And unfortunately, after basic training, which was a stroll in the park, I didn't, that was 10 weeks at Catterick. I wasn't posted to 2 squadron, and that's the parachute squadron of the RAF regiment. I was sent to another squadron that I wasn't very enamored with. So it took me a while. But eventually, after 4 years...
You trained at Catterick. That's an army garrison town.
No, yeah, it is. But but there's also RAF regiment, RAF Catterick, rather, which had the home of the RAF regiment. And that's where we did our basic training. So I did my basic training out in the north on the Yorkshire moors or dales or whatever they're called over Christmas. So friggin' cold. Sorry, are we allowed to swear on the podcast? I forgot to ask you.
Not for the first 5 minutes, otherwise YouTube punishes all right. us with all their wrath, and it's
that's going to be hard work, but you let me know when 5 minutes is up.
Yeah.
So yeah, basic training was up in Catterick, 10 weeks. And that's after 6 weeks RAF training at Swinderby, which was just, you know, learning how to write, really, and add up and shave because I was 17. So Catterick, 10 weeks there, wasn't very difficult. And then I got posted to another squadron, which was, it was good in a way because next Christmas I was in Belize, or actually that Christmas, we finished up just after Christmas. I was in Belize doing a 6-month tour in Belize, which was just changed my life. It was life changing. Why I live here in the tropics now, because I love the tropics. And I managed to learn to dive in Belize on St. George's Quay. I think, again, I was at 17 and a half coming up, I think. And Jesus, I found my certificate the other day. We did 10 dives, I think I did. And we got to about 38 meters, and you've dived, you know that's ridiculous, right? You know, I was knocked off my gourd, for want of a better swear word, and it was just so casual, you know. Oh, just for diving
for our friends listening, that's nitrogen,
bloody deep. Yeah, sorry,
nitrogen narcosis, and gourd is head. If you didn't get that, all the military shortcuts.
Speaking the old English,
we know what we mean because we speak the same language. But
nitrogen narcosis—it's when you get too much nitrogen in your blood and your brain goes trippy. It's like being on drugs. You go off your head, and you have no sense of time. And at 35 meters. I was just in this psychedelic world because Belize, I mean, it was the greatest, the best place to dive in the world. Probably still is, but back then it was pristine. Hardly anyone had dived it. It's amazing. It's just incredible experience. Just absolutely beautiful.
Can I just add to that? I often get asked which one of the 80 countries I've visited.
Yeah.
Would I like to settle down in?
Yeah.
To which I always answer, it doesn't really matter because paradise is in your head. It's not a place you can find. But if I really had to choose a place, I'd say Belize.
And I can understand that.
A big part of the reason is the diving and snorkeling there.
Is insane, isn't
beyond
it?
Beyond belief. It's like insane. Nowhere else on the planet.
Yeah.
Everywhere else I've been, whether it's Thailand, South America, North America, Africa, all the places I've dived around the world, all the reefs are just dead where they've been trodden on by novice divers and all the wildlife has disappeared.
Nothing comes close.
Belize is like dropping into the most tropical of tropical fish tanks. Sharks are just swimming by you like this. You reach under the rocks and pull out lobsters. Really amazing.
The colours are insane, right? Just insane, especially when you're not.
So they couldn't get this. Sorry, mate. I just wanted to clarify. Was this part of your first draft then?
Believe? Yeah, that was my first posting to 2020. Okay, so this is quite funny. My second name is Bint, B-I-N-T, which is a cracker. But at 17 years old, I was posted to a Scottish squadron in RAF Lucas. So you can imagine, I learned to laugh at myself very quickly.
Because Bint means old lady in Scottish, right?
Well, I wouldn't say old lady, just woman, really. It comes from Swahili, derived from Swahili, Binti. But it also really originates from Arabic, I believe. And it's really a derogatory word for a young lady, if you like. So, yeah. But jocks just use it as woman or hen or whatever. So, yeah, that was quite a challenge. But it's just funny, right? You just laugh at yourself. It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And it's just a funny little story. So, I got sent to a Scottish squadron that I didn't really care for much. And I didn't want to be at. But I did get to go to Belize. And that was a life-changing experience for me. I remember stepping off the plane on the pan in 38 degrees heat. I've never experienced anything like it. Palm trees everywhere. And it was just beautiful. It just hit me. And so on my first R&I, after Jungle Warfare school and everything, which was, again, absolute brilliant. I love Jungle Warfare. On my first R&R, I'm sat on a quay, a crystal coral quay, that's an island, off the 50 kilometers off the coast of Belize, absolute paradise, supping pina coladas in a chair on a hammock, going, yeah, this was a good move. I think I'm going in the right direction. And then once I finished with that squadron, I hounded my my officer, who was X2 squadron, but he never really was on the squadron because he had a parachute accident. He thrapped in, broke his legs and his back. So he never got on squadron. And I just hounded him. And I put in so many leave passes, and not leave passes, transfer passes, whatever they're called. I even put them in red. I was charged God knows how many times because I didn't like the place. And eventually he called me into his office and he went, "Bin, you want to get off the squadron, right? You want to go to squadron?" And I was like, "You know I do." And we're very irreverent, right, in the RF Reg. It's very casual. You call your officer boss. They probably, a lot of places, they call you first names, etc. And he goes, "You know I do, boss." He said, "All right, I've got a deal for you." And it was around the time at Greenham Common was taking British, and they decided the RAF regiment. He said, "If you go to Greenham Common for 2 years, you get posting of your choice." He said, "You're guaranteed to go to 2 Squadron. If you don't accept it, you're not guaranteed anything." So I ummed and I ahed, and Greenham Common's near Newbury, and I grew up in Reading, which is 10, 15 miles down the road. So I just thought that it's going to be an all right posting. So I took the posting to Greenham Common as a part of 501 Security Police Group, USAF. So I became a security policeman with M16s and other stuff, American stuff.
So Greenham Common, for our for people who don't know, it was a nuclear missile base, wasn't it?
Yeah, the first one in Britain. Then there was Molesford. You just look it up. It's where all the peace campaigners, you know, all the riots.
It was a nuclear missile holding place. You used to get lots of big jets coming from the States, yeah. I believe.
It was just little America. It was just in between that was America. You spent dollars. Everything was American. The candy bar thing, you know, the what do they call them when you get snacks out of a vending machine? Yeah, they were American chocolates. It was all Hershey's and M&M's and stuff like that, and Mountain Dew. I know you guys know what that stuff is now, but we didn't back then. they bring America to Britain and put it in a fence.
No, they take America. In my experience, all around the world, America gets taken where the Americans go. The same in Hong Kong. In Hong Kong,
and it's very sad.
They didn't eat English food, British food.
They don't learn the culture. They don't integrate.
No. Some do, but some are quite insular. I'm just trying to be fair here.
That's all right. It's only my experience, yeah.
But it's, you know, anyway, that's an aside. So Greenham Common was very famous for having peace protesters all around the perimeter fence. So you did your draft there. Is that was the deal? Then you could go to a parachute squadron.
Yeah. So after 2 years, they said I could go to. I could get my posting. Okay. So, Greenham was just a horrible place. It was just 24 hour shifts of guarding inside of a nuclear silo, in a vehicle with your oppo going brain dead and doing security checks. It was soul destroying. You know, there were some good soldiers and good units in the RAF regiment. A lot of X2 were there that I met and became very friends with, and it was soul destroying. And a lot of guys turned to drink because they weren't doing what they wanted to do. And a lot of guys PVR'd, bought themselves out straight after that as well. So I got a call up to HQ out of the blue, and I was I'd lost all my fitness. I wasn't interested anymore. I just could become NFI. And
what's that? No further interest.
Yeah, no further interest. That's the one. Yeah, something like that. And and they said, "Oh, you've got a posting bin." And I went, "Yeah." And they went, "Yep, you've got to report to Catterick to do not Catterick. Yeah, it was Catterick to do your pre-para. And then if you pass, you're going to 2 Squadron." And I was skipping. And I went, "Oh, great. When?" And they said, "In 2 weeks' time." Now, the reason I say that is because I wasn't fit. I was drinking too much. I was eating American food, hash browns and grits. And this sudden stone cold fear came over me that I'd only got 2 weeks to get myself fit to do pre-para, which in your world might be whatever your last test, all arms course or whatever it's called. And in the paras, it's like they're equivalent of P company. So I had two weeks to prepare. And that's not good enough, you know. So, you know, it takes 1 week just to leave.
I'll interrupt you then just for our listeners and watchers. So before the para course is available to many different people within the British Armed Forces. So obviously the parachute regiment.
Yeah.
Obviously all the regiments or units in the brigade which support the parachute regiment. It's open to the Royal Marines. It's open to us, obviously to our special boat service, who then go on to do the halo and hi-ho skydiving course.
Yeah.
Obviously the SAS, many of whom come from the parachute regiment, so they will already have done the jumps course being the parachute course by the time they join the SAS. You get many Gurkhas on the parachute course because they have an airborne unit. I'm probably not using the correct terminology here, but it was a long time ago.
And so, airborne cookery.
So Graham is in the RAF. He's in the RAF regiment, but now he's going to go to their airborne unit. So
squadron. So let me clarify.
Can you just explain what's the need to do a fitness course before you do something that requires no fitness, which is throwing yourself out of an aeroplane?
Yeah, that's right. Because it's not about parachuting, is it, to be airborne? It's about being fit and being excellent soldiers and professional. Because basically, anytime you parachute into somewhere, you've then got to do a tab or yomp. You call them tabs. So is it yomp? No, you call them yomp. Yomp. You call it yomp, don't you? Okay, well, we call it tab, tactical advance to battle, some pants like that. So you've got to do at least a 10 mile tab with your kit to battle, advance to battle, do your battle, and then bug out. So that's, you know, that's over hills, mountains, or whatever. So you've got to be bloody fit, mate, and that's all there is to it.
In simple terms, if you're attached to the airborne brigade, you've got to be able to keep up with them. So you've got to do their P company or similar.
Yeah.
If you're in the commando brigade, as obviously the Royal Marines are, you've got to be able to keep up with the Marines. So if you go there as, say, a 2-9 a 2-9 gunner or a 5-9 assault engineer from the Army, because remember, Marines is Navy, you come there from the Army, you do what's called the all-arms commando course. So you go to Limpston, you do a very concise, let's just say a 12-week course. It might be a lot less. And then you can work alongside us. What Graham's talking about is he's got to prove that he can work alongside the paras by doing this pre-fitness course. But not P Company, no?
No, it's called pre-para. It's run by the RAF and the RAF regiment. Don't forget that the PJIs, the parachute jump instructors, all come from the RAF.
Yeah.
Does
everybody do that if they're not commando trained, or do some some people do P company. Is P company just for paras?
Just for paras. So RAF regiment purely is pre-para. So it's called pre-para. It used to be run at Catterick and in Scotland and the Yorkshire Moors, various places with large hills and horrible things to climb up. And it's 3 weeks. And I believe, and I could be wrong, but I believe P Company is 2 weeks. It's 3 weeks. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. So obviously you've got to pass that before you even go to the squad.
What was the hardest physical test then?
The Three Peaks, which I believe is in the Yorkshire Dales. I could be wrong. So you go to... There's a big viaduct somewhere in the Yorkshire Dales. There's the Three Peaks. It's a very famous walk. And I think it's about 28 miles. I could be wrong. It's a long time ago, Chris. And you get dropped off with your weapons, your pack. You camp that night. Luckily, so lovely. I got food poisoning that night. Spent most of the night out in the Bondu with the squits and throwing up. And then the next morning, you clear camp, and so you've got to tab over to the Three Peaks, which is 28 miles, I believe. And again, I could be wrong. I can't even remember the weight. It wouldn't be 40 pounds. It's probably 20 pounds, 30 pounds in your weapon, boots, and you have that's. I think it's called skirmishing when you have to climb up the rocks and the mountains and then go along the knife edge. So it's a little bit of mountaineering sort of thing in it, which. I'm really scared of heights and I've got really, I'm only 5'6" with short legs. So going up the hills is really hard for me. And you have to pass that in 8 hours, under 8 hours.
Well, that's very similar to the Marines 30 miler then.
They're all very designed very closely, right?
So we can ascertain it's harder than the 5 mile of death.
Well, luckily for me, the 5 mile of death wasn't in when I was there. Lucky I left in time, or I wouldn't be talking to you now, would I? You don't pass the 5 mile of death, full stop.
I take it you've seen that video, right?
I love it. It's hilarious. And that's, I think that's at Catterick, that's at Basics, RAF Regiment Basics.
Can you just explain the video for our friends at home?
Yeah. I'm sure they've all seen it briefly. Yeah, I'm sure they've all seen it. There's an RAF regiment basics instructor. You know the guys that teaches the new recruits at Catterick? It may not even be at Catterick. Scouse somebody. I won't say his last name because in case I get it wrong and damn somebody. And he's standing there going, come on, lads, come on. Stand toe-to-toe with the paras and the Marines. They do their P company and they do their Marine course, but you're going to do the 5 miles of death.
Yeah.
And someone was filming it, and the person who filmed it and put it online needs a back slap. But actually, it has provided a huge amount of humour among the right people like me and you, whereas some of the stupid, dumb Remf Pongos actually believe it and try to use it to have a dig at the RAF regiment. In my day, the army didn't know who the RAF regiment were. The Marines did. We had a good relationship with the Marines because we worked alongside them.
You're called Rock Apes. Right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
Where does that name come from?
there's a few stories, but the one that has the most credit for me is that there was a race up the Rock of Gibraltar with a Bofa gun back in the 40s or 50s or something. Between military units who were serving in Gibraltar, and the RAF regiment won it because they used to be Bofa gunners, and so it was running up the rock carrying a Bofa gun, which is a pretty heavy bit of kit, not all in one go, all stripped down, and then you know, a bit like the Royal Tournament when those, you know, your bootneck
field guns do field gun,
yeah, that's
race.
The one, yeah. Which you sort of poo poo until you see the video of their training. And then you sort of have a newfound respect for them. Hard buggers. So it was a bit like that. And of course, the Rock of Gibraltar is covered in those apes, monkeys, and I believe that's where the name come from. But don't put that on Wikipedia and quote my name.
So let's fast forward to getting to Bryce, and I'm just conscious of our time here, Graham.
Sure.
So you did the 30 miler. That sounds like you proved everyone
did all the log races and stretcher races and all that. Yeah. And then you get you at the end, you get pass or fail, and then you get shipped off. If you pass, I think, the rate's not very high for passing. And then whichever ones among you passed, you then get, I think you get a few days off, and then you get sent to Bryce Norton, obviously, to do your actual jumps course, which was really good fun. And I would just like to say, because it's the 15th of April, January, March, April. Yeah. While I was at Bryce Norton, my dear friend I grew up with, who was from Botswana, Fergus Rennie, was there doing his SAS, or his Pathfinders Halo course. And we kept getting rollicked by the PGIs because we kept talking and laughing with each other and wandering off and stuff. But I say that because I just respect him, because he was killed in Garage Day serving with 2-2. We joined up together. We were in air cadets together and grew up together. So respect.
Where's Garage Day?
Garage Day in Bosnia. And I was in Bosnia at the time. I was in Sarajevo. So he was very close to me. I didn't even know he was there. I was an aid worker at the time. And then when I came out of Sarajevo, there was a letter from my parents waiting with a newspaper article in it saying SAS soldier killed in Bosnia, and obviously it was Fergus. And so respect Fergus. I'm not drinking tonight, but I would have a drink. I'll have a drink for him at the weekend.
Yeah, respect to your friend. How was he killed, if I can ask?
Shot in the head, driving a junior officer, I believe, wanted to go and either stop the Serbs from advancing or observe them. A few of my buddies, some of whom I was in two squadron with, actually. We have quite a few. Two squadron has quite a few people go to Hereford, never to be seen again. And there was a couple of my mates with them, but this officer decided to, as the Serbs were advancing to ethnically cleanse Garage Day, I don't know whether he was going to stop them or to be King Canute, as a friend of mine once said, and wave the UN, "You will stop," because the Serbs don't really listen to anybody. And as he was driving the Land Rover, he took a 7.62 to the head, and that would do it. Mm. And the officer was shot in the arm. He managed to steer the Land Rover and back to some sort of safe area. They managed to get them, bug them out, and fly them back to Sarajevo, but he died in Sarajevo from his wounds and was obviously flown back to Hereford. I was still in Bosnia, and I got a lot of civilian friends, my good friend Matt, who went to their funeral, his funeral, and sad, very sad. General Rose was there at the time. Apparently he was in a meeting, well, at the time. So, and no, I haven't got too much respect for the whole operation out there, but I don't think that's what we're here to talk about. I just wanted to bring that up because it's 15th of April today, and I remembered.
Yeah, we will remember them.
We will. So off I go to Bryce Norton, and I'm there, and Fergus is there, and I didn't, "Ferg, you bugger." And it was funny because, again, it's more of an army environment in a way. And again, RAF regiment, very irreverent, and two squadron are particularly irreverent. And just to explain something, Chris, the RAF regiment, where RAF regiment slides on their combat smocks, but once you do your pre-power and you go to two squadron, we actually no longer considered ourselves part of RAF regiment. We considered ourselves as a separate entity. So it's 110, 120 blokes, and we just considered ourselves two squadron, this sort of airborne squadron. And we didn't wear the RAF regiment slides, and we didn't really associate with the RAF regiment anymore. So when people say about the 5 mile of death and that rubbish, don't care. It wasn't us.
You quickly forgot your roots.
Yeah, you just become, I know it's elitism and it's bullshit now, but back then, yeah. And we were even more irreverent. So we had Paris smocks, obviously, and we didn't wear RAF regiment insignia. We just wore our DZ and our wings. Yeah. And there was 120 of us on an RAF station at RAF Lavington. And a very, very small, quiet unit that kept itself to itself, really. Quite special.
A lot of Marines wore Paris smocks. Somebody asked me the other day, how come I've seen pictures of Marines wearing Paris smocks? I just replied, because many of us preferred them to the bog standard issued.
There was a time, jacket. Yeah, there was a time that was fighting talk for us. If we saw a hat in a Paris smock without wings, that was fighting talk right there. But for some reason, it just molds over time. People wear SAS smocks and Paris smocks, and you just have to get used to it. Really, it's the wings on your arm that count, isn't it?
Yeah, I bought mine I bought mine before I got my wings, because I remember wearing it in the Northern Ireland conflict, and I bought it at the Army and Navy, you know, surplus shop.
Yeah,
it was about 80.
It was probably mine. I probably sold it.
So you've rocked up at Bryce Norton. Bryce Norton. The para course is administrated and overseen by the parachute regiment, but all the instruction, so the learning, is done by PJIs, parachute jump instructors.
Yeah,
and this is the RAF.
Yes, that's right. PJIs, parachute jump instructors. And they're very good. They're real cool guys. I like them. They're very fit as well. And they've got a very good sense of humour. But it was this very strange paradox where it's the first time I've come and seen army bullshit and lived in Nissen huts with pongos and come under a sort of a slight sort of more regimented army, you know, traditional manner. And it was a bit foreign to us. So because like I say, we're pretty slack. So it's a quite a strange thing. But I still enjoyed it. It was great fun doing the para course, and a lot of drinking in the bar afterwards, and a lot of bravado. And
can I give a couple of examples there? Because it was the same for us.
Yeah.
You've got to remember, folks, we were trained commandos. I'd already, by the time I did my para course, I'd served 4 years, and I was down for promotion. I was already a lance corporal. And I actually did two para courses, but I won't confuse you. I'll just talk as though I did one. Now you rock up to Bryce, and of course these parachute regiment corporals and sergeants, non-commissioned officers, basically are treating you like you're what's called
like you're a recruit.
Yeah, baby paras. A baby para is a para who they've just got their red berry or their cherry berry, but they
haven't gone pink yet.
Yeah,
it hasn't faded to pink yet. Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't done the jumps course and they haven't been on any kind of, they haven't been to a unit yet or been on deployment. So they are, they're basically just, they're still in the kind of recruit phase.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they've just got their lids.
Yeah. So we were getting talked down to. Not that, you know, you don't care, but you do when it affects your liberty. They try keeping us home for one weekend because someone had hung socks on a radiator. Well, when you're a trained rank, like we were, you can hang what the fuck you like on a radiator. As long as there's not an inspection coming round, right?
You can shove it, exactly.
Yeah. Somebody just put a hand up, Graham, and said, "We ain't fucking staying here, Sergeant. Not. I'm telling my Marines to go home. Sorry."
Yeah.
He kind of like wound his neck in then. But another one was the, I think it was the CSM. So they're kind of equivalent of the company Sergeant Major, come running out after these two lads who were walking to breakfast without their berries on. Well,
we do all the time. Yeah.
Marines don't wear their berries on camp when they're going to and from food. It's just a done thing. Every other time you do, but to go to and from food, for some reason, you can just bimble. So stroll.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this CSM didn't realize these two guys are SAS. nice
it's
guys.
Like an odd angry shot. You love it.
They were nice guys. I actually got to share a room with them, which was a brilliant experience.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
And this CSM goes, "Oi, you two, where's your effing headwear?" And these two SAS guys just looked at each other and went, they looked at each other, and just continued walking.
It's gold, right?
One of those memorable things in my life.
What do you remember what parent unit they were from?
I actually do. I think Nige was D&D, so Devon and Dorset's.
Right.
And the other chat, I won't say his name because it's a nickname and everyone in the regiment will know who I'm talking about. But I don't know. I've talked about them before. They were just exceptionally nice lads. They were smartest dressed on the course. I used to look at these two, you know, so SAS, Special Air Service, Special Forces, Special Ops. Used to look at these guys in the pub, you know, they'd be sat quietly in a corner, just chatting, drinking a pint of ale, smart casuals on. You would never know, Graham, you know. There was none of this
right.
Shaggy Graham hair and
back in
stuff.
Their proper old days when they kept quiet, yeah.
Yeah, they were just very humble men.
Back in Fergus's days.
And they of course, they were just as interested in the Marines as I was interested in the SAS, because they just come, not just, but, you know, they come from army regiments. So obviously the Marines had always been held in high esteem.
Yeah.
So that was quite in.
There's also another interesting factor for you, I'd imagine, because the Marines and the Paras, you actually had much more rivalry or hatred for each other than the RAF regiment. Because
Absolutely.
Is it not? I thought it was.
It was one-way thing that came off the back of the Falklands. About who got to Port Stanley first, because 4-5 Commando and was it 2 Para? Sorry if I'm wrong. They marched the 80 miles into Port Stanley, right?
I heard the Gurkhas got there first.
I heard it was the RAF regiment.
Yeah, we flew there.
But here's the thing. I swear to God, in my 7 years in the Marines, I never heard a Marine slag off the Paras in that way. Of course, there was a bit of rivalry. Yeah. But what I did what I did see is one of our drivers, while I was in recruit training, told us this story. They were on the rifle range next to a bunch of Paras. And the Paras were all shouting, you know, the Paras would have this thing. They'd sing, I surrender, right?
Oh, okay,
Which it would be all right if it was meant in good spirits.
Of course, it always is.
What a lot of these Paras didn't realise is those boys in the Falklands,
they lost their mates.
They were not only ordered to surrender by the governor of the Falklands, they not only put up one hell of a fight that would make any military person proud, they didn't get a single loss of life against all these Argentine casualties. They held off hundreds of Argentines with just one detachment of men, right? And in the end, it was a simple choice, right? You are going to die if you don't. It's that set. And what are you going to die? Your wife is going to lose a husband.
Yeah,
kids are going to lose their dads for the rest of their life. It was the most sensible thing to do, right? Anyway,
no brainer.
I'm not trying to justify it.
No, you don't have to. It's almost as bad as 5 Mile of Death, mate.
So this guy, this driver who's on the rifle range with his troop, I don't know if it was training or whatever, the Paras next to them start singing, "I surrender," and their troop sergeant just went, "Right, lads, fucking kill them."
And it's on.
They ran over and had this big scrap, right? But no, I always have utmost respect for paras. Any Marine, if you join the Army, what would you join? You join the paras. Any para, if you join the Navy, what would you join? You join the Marines. So it's all silly. And it's non-existent now, Graham. I know that because through my YouTube channel, I get the loveliest messages from former paras. They love my channel, you know, and I love my channel. I love them. End of.
Yeah.
It was just this Falklands thing. And like I say, it was one way. You wouldn't hear them in the Marines. We didn't go around going, fucking paras, they're shit.
That's good.
They did a different job to us, you know?
Anyway.
Look,
once you got to a certain level, we're all the same, right? And there's a, I mean, in business, in Civvy Street, we call it professional respect, right? And there's that professional respect once you've done a high-level fitness course. It's all the remps and the pongos and the idiots and the infantry and the cannon fodder that can do the crying and piss-taking and laughing at 5 mile of death and all that rubbish because they never hacked it.
I'm conscious of the time here, mate. We've got about 20-odd minutes left. So let's talk about... We've talked about the administration of the course.
Yeah.
Do you want to just talk a bit about the training on the course? Because I loved it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. A lot of hanging from ropes and, a little bit too much jumping off ramps. And there was that big swinging contraption. I seem to remember the Knacker Cracker or something like that.
That was a huge death slide, wasn't it?
You
threw yourself out this big tower and went whizzing down this death slide.
It was all preparing your body, wasn't it, really, for the shock of parachute jumping. And for people who don't know, parachute jumping isn't just, quick stand up and jump out of this plane because it's fun. It's an hour or two of low-level flying in a Hercules with up to 100 blokes sat squashed up to you. Your parachute, your reserve, your berg and your gat on the side, and no room because you're two abreast. And low-level flying, over the contours, hugging the contours of the land, blokes being sick into sick bags, you stand up, hook up.
You're not allowed to call it a gat in the presence of a former Royal Marine, mate. That is a big fucking no-no. It's a rifle. That is it. It's
rifle.
And you don't carry...
If it was a GPMG?
You never carry a rifle by the carrying handle as a Marine. You always carry the actual rifle itself. You see people carrying... Is it the SLR by the carrying handle?
You break it off right away.
Keep talking to our audience about the course. Yeah. So I just need to go and snort a line of cocaine.
Yeah, sure. No worries. So because I was quite a short guy, 5'6", I didn't wear as much as the other guys. I would always get the bloody GPMG, which is about 26 kilos, I think, if I remember right, and I'm sure you'll correct me. But you do your 1 hour, 2 hour flight in a Hercules before, it's hot, it's sweaty, blokes are throwing up, we're singing songs, having a laugh, of course. And that's before you ascend to the correct height, you come onto your flight path of the DZ, you're ordered to stand up, hook up, fit equipment. I may get this wrong. It's been a long time. So you're struggling to put your hooks on your harness, on your Bergen and your gat, and you get that on and you put your reserve on it. And then you've got to hook your static line up onto there. And then you've got to stand up for what? Anything from 10 to 20 to 40 minutes if you have to go round again because they miss a DZ or the pilots are shonky. So you're standing up with what, 50, 60, 70, up to 80 pounds. And once we did the all up weight, which was 120 pounds, we all had to weigh 120 pounds, 128 pounds, all up weight trials. And that was really, that was some hard parachuting. So then you've got hook up, stand up, then you've got shuffle to the door. So you'll go down forward, back, forward, rear, front, rear, front. God, it's coming back now. Rear, front, rear, front. You get to the door, the number one, which is always lovely being number one. They open the door. You're standing there. The wind comes in. You start, the adrenaline starts pumping. And there was a funny thing in the RAF Regiment, two squadron, sorry, that we always, again, because we were very irreverent and we just had no discipline. We were very renowned for being the fastest airborne unit to get out of a Hercules door. And that's also because we had a very good relationship with the PGIs, you know, Bryce Norton just down the road from Flemington. And I remember just putting my hand up the back of the guy in front's parachute, in between his body and his parachute, like this, and run with him, and blokes are pushing me and I went out with him, you know. So we literally used to push the PGIs away and said, one, two, they're staggered, three, but we just push them out of the way and run out the door. But I digress.
I've only ever been the first man out the door. The same with both my balloon jumps.
Cool, bugger me, chaps. Bloody high here, isn't it? Right, okay. Into the door. Don't panic. Mummy loves you. Right. Don't look down. I said, don't look down. Right. Put your arms across your bloody reserve. That's it, soldier. Wait, wait. Oh.
Yeah.
In the balloon jumps, when they said, who's going first, I just said, I am.
Because I was over and done with.
Well, it was more that I was with Baby Paris, so I had, as a Royal Marine, you have to go first, right?
On your first balloon jump, did the PGIs tell you about the hard-on fund? They were all there, you know, white knuckles on the balloon cage, 800 feet, 700 feet, first jump ever. Not for me, because I'd done parachute jumps. I'm scared of heights, so the balloon jump, I didn't like it at first. If I did a few in a day, that's fine.
Just explain what the balloon jump is for people who don't know. It's a helium balloon, isn't it?
Yeah, like a barrage balloon. It is actually a barrage balloon with a small basket that can take up to six people underneath on a winch on the back of a truck, an RAF truck, and they just winch it up to 700 feet and you're blowing in the wind. It's deadly silent because no one's talking. So then the winch noise, and it's shaking, and then all of a sudden you get 700 feet, it just stops, and the noise just stops, and you just hear the wind in the clouds, and it suddenly becomes dead eerie and dead scary because you know you've got to jump out the bloody thing. And the PGIs turn around to tell us about, you know, jumping out the balloon. They said, right, there's a fund. It's been going for about 10 years now. It's about $3,000. We all put a pound in, and I think it sits at $10,000 now. If anyone can produce an erection, you win it. No one ever won it. They didn't know that was gone by the time you got there, I take it. Sad. Yeah, maybe someone won it.
I never heard of that. We were taught two things on parachute training. One is what to do if you get hung up. So the strap of your parachute.
Oh, there's
parachute.
A great video on YouTube, yeah.
The strap of your parachute doesn't pull the parachute out. What do you do? So you're hung either under the plane or under the basket of the balloon. This another drill we got taught was breakaway balloon. They have
to keep, that's right, yeah, yeah, just jump over the edge, go.
Yeah, they have to teach you what to do if the cable of the balloon snaps and you start going off to Jupiter. And I'm serious, it's just going to go up, right?
Yeah, rapidly.
In that case, you dispense with all drills. The PGI make sure you're hooked up, then he pushes you out, right?
Abandoned ship, in your terms.
Yeah, exactly. So one of our guys, they said, any questions? And one of our guys puts his hand out and says, yeah, what about if you get a breakaway balloon and you're the last man out.
And a hang up.
And you get hung up. I think it might even have been me that asked that.
But. Yeah, it probably was, yeah. You're going to become a beaver with very sharp teeth.
Yeah, I was the same in the aircraft. When we emplaned, so when we got on the aircraft in our sticks, I just hung around and stood right at the back. So I'd be the last person on, i.e. the first person. The last person in the door is going to be sat nearest the door, right?
Yeah.
My biggest upset on that whole course, well, I did two courses. If you want to find out why I did two parachute courses, friends, I'll put a link or have a look through my portfolio of videos to one that's called, I think it's called The Parachute Course. I talk about it.
Well, did you get your American wings as well, or do you go French Foreign Legion or something?
No, the first course I did got cancelled after the balloon.
Ah, okay.
Because of the Gulf War.
Ah, okay, that bloody thing got in the way. Yeah.
All the Hercs went to the Gulf. The funny thing was...
Oh, of course, yeah. I was in one of them.
Yeah, there you go. The funny thing was the two SES guys were asking me if I knew Bob Consiglio, who was a Marine that left the Marines so he could join the SES, which is something you had to do.
Yeah.
And I was like... And that was a name, if you were in the Marines at the time, then the name Bob...
You knew.
Everybody knew because he joined the SES, right? Which was fine. Everyone was in, like, massive admiration for him.
Because you normally go SBS, right?
SBS, Special Boat Service, yeah.
Yeah.
So that course finished. When I got home, I got a lift back to Plymouth with two 2-9 Commander guys and a Land Rover. That was quick. I put the news on. And there's a coffin coming out of a church and the newscaster says, today the people of so-and-so buried the body of Trooper Bob Consiglio, the first casualty of the Gulf War. So
is that right?
Anyone who knows about the patrol Bravo 20 would know Bob was on that patrol. So,
So cheers to Bob too.
Yeah, there you go. Definitely.
God, you don't have to go far back, do you? I had another chap who was on my sea flight, which was even the most irreverent and dreggy of two squadron. Two squadron bad enough, but we had three flights, so about 30 blokes each. And sea flight was, the NFI ones, the more dreggy. And I had another lad who went past his selection, Bonnie, and he would drink to him too. Unfortunately, he came across an accident in training, I believe. So there's another one. It's you don't have to go very far back when you're in the Marines and sort of elitish units, right?
Well, I say this a lot in my videos. You know, in the Marines, you know a lot of young men that die.
That's right.
Just
that's right.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
Quite often drunken sort of stuff. Accidents.
Antics. Yeah. Same. Yeah.
Quite a few people have poisoned themselves in Norway by going to sleep in their vehicle and leaving the engine running.
And oh, Jesus Christ.
A leak in the exhaust pipe and it's
got into the crazy shit, right?
The cabin and poison.
Yeah.
All that.
Well, going back to RAF Lovington, where two squadron were, is where they pack your parachutes, right? So all your parachute that you jumped with was packed at RAF Lovington. So the balloon cage would often just go up on the airfield and we would just get the shout, you know, down tools, you're going parachuting.
Brilliant. So
and you'd spend the afternoon doing 4, 5, 6 balloon jumps, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, just because they're training their PGIs and stuff. And
they
of course,
took,
when
they
when,
took, when, sorry, go on.
No, sorry, just when they trained the PGIs, they used to ask us to arc up a little bit, you know, or to pretend that we weren't going to jump and stuff. And two squadron was just a bunch of nutters. I'm sure the Marines is very similar. And the antics we used to get up to in the balloon cage, just absolutely hilarious, Chris. You know, just jumping over the side, just refusing to jump, sitting down, running out before it even got to the full height. All stuff that you'd be charged with these days. But it was all, it was just such good fun, mate. Just so, I did 60 jumps. Four years I was on two squad, I think. I did 60 jumps, parachute jumps.
Wow, that's a lot. They took the balloon, Graham, to 4-5 Commando. Yeah, they used to take it on tour around the country.
Yeah, they used to drive it. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And all the lads in 4-5 were going, do you want to do the balloon jump? Yeah, right. Put my pullover on with the para wings on. Just go, and they go, right, what do I do? Just fucking jump.
Oh, what, and they hadn't done a jump score?
No.
Oh, brilliant. Love it. That's so awesome.
The jump is the RAF.
Just jump. What do I do? Jump. It's a bungee jump, right? It is. It's a bungee jump.
The RAF.
But you don't come back up.
The RAF instructors were looking at these guys and going, has he done this before? You know, because they didn't know. Yeah. You know, the lads were trying to teach him.
That's brilliant, man. Jump, but I love that. Yeah. I love that. It's beautiful. That's such a, you know, military, at that level, military thing, isn't it? That's the sort of stuff I love. Remind me to tell you a story about when we came back off maneuvers or exercises, we call it, and we were made, our stupid officers made us go to an army, what do you call them, firepower demo that we didn't want to go to. Remind me of that before we finish the story, but we'll go back to parachuting. Yeah, we've had guys go.
You obviously did a night jump.
Yeah, night jump. I missed a water jump, thankfully, because I don't like water. I'm not a Marine.
We didn't do that on our course.
Night jump. We used to do loads of night jumps. Every time we did an exercise with a jump in, it was always at night. And then tab off, 10-mile tab. And that's it. I used to absolutely love night jumps. So beautiful. Except, of course, the landing's always very... depends how dark it is, really. Because you know what ground rush is, you know, it's very hard to judge at night. So your drills have got to be spot on, you know, your PLF, your parachute landing fall has got to be spot on. And you've got to get your direction, your wind and everything right. And you're looking at the tree line and against the skyline and then boom, you're on the ground, you know. You got to make sure your Bergen's dropped.
What was your biggest accident? You tell me yours and I'll tell you mine.
Mine personally?
Yeah.
I didn't have any. I've been caught in strings and I've done, what are they called? Air steels, yeah. Or any collapse. I've never pulled a reserve.
An air steel is when you go under another parachutist.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You steal their air, so then they fall through your canopy.
Yeah, that's right. And then if then it just keeps happening, right, until the unlucky one hits the deck. Or what's worse is, of course, as you do the air steal, you then get caught in their rigging line. So you've now got two guys on one parachute and one will collapse. Now, the thing is, the reason that they dispatch you, those dispatchers do that timing by every 1 second, is so you have a half a second gap between parachutes so that this doesn't happen. Now, the fact that we were just idiots and nutters and we didn't care, we just like to get out quickly because that's it's about getting as many people in a condensed area on the DZ as quickly as possible. So we always wanted to be the best airborne unit. We had so many air steals and entanglements and reserve deployments and accidents because the quicker you get out, the closer you are. So it's a bit more dangerous. And I remember once the biggest accident I saw was the PGIs. We had a Land Rover on board that was being, you know, what's it called? The big drop or something that was going out on the ramp first. That goes out, then there's a 2 second gap, and then they go, okay, green on, go. And the first one goes, second one, third one, fourth one. Well somehow the second big drop, the Land Rover, two Land Rovers, I think it was, first one went out, okay. The PGA on the port side, I think that was always first, didn't see the second one got jammed and didn't go out. And eventually they freed it. They threw it out just at the same time.
Oh.
As number one went out port side and he went out with a Land Rover. Lucky he had a helmet on.
My only mistake, I'm sure I would have made many more had I done more parachute jumps, but the mistake I made was I jumped out of the plane, and when you come into land with a canopy over you, you've got four they call them web lifts that then go up to the strings.
You pulled the wrong ones, didn't you?
The cords that attach the parachute. If you're coming this way because the wind is blowing you this way, you pull down on your back lift webs, and what that does is it spills air out of the canopy and it slows you.
Stalls.
It slows you down. They call it stalling the canopy, right?
Yeah, which you're not meant to do, right?
Clever boy here pulled down on the wrong ones. For some reason, I'm coming in, I'm going this way, and I reached up and I grabbed the front and I pulled them down. So, of course, I'm now going twice the speed in wind.
Yeah.
The PJI on the floor is shouting through the megaphone, number 17, pull the other lift webs. Pull the other lift. Well, when you're coming down and you're so focused on what you're doing, number 17 means nothing to you, especially when your name's Chris. You know what I mean?
That's right,
I didn't realise he was shouting at me. I'm just going, right, coming in. And then the ground rushed.
Laughing at number 17 who's getting it wrong.
Well, I knew when I saw the ground rush, it's coming twice as fast at me, that I'd got it wrong.
Bang, it's too late.
I was smashing.
Too late. Face plant. Lovely.
I hit my helmet so hard on the ground, I thought I was going
to... I've actually nearly been knocked out. When we were doing those all up trials, it was the last jump, Sim 45, so 90 blokes. I think it was on Salisbury Plain. I can't remember, it doesn't matter. Maybe Everly, I don't know. And it was the very last jump of the trials before the squadron went off to America. But I think the parachute regiment took over in America. And it was too windy. I can't remember what the highest knots you were allowed to jump in, 30 or 40 or 20, I don't know. But it was at least 10 to 15 knots over that. We knew that. And you could see the windsock. But they were so desperate to get it. They said, we'll go up anyway, and if it drops, we'll try and drop you in a window, drop off of the wind. Bullshit. And they dropped us at really high knots, really high weight. And I came in backwards, hit my head, saw stars, nearly knocked out, dragged for about half a kilometre before you pulled your risers, every bit of strength pulling your risers in to collapse the chute. And then of course, what we did, we just de-rigged, and we were just running for all the blokes. This is an exercise, so fuck it. We were running for all the blokes because we knew how hard they were just about to land. And I watched my scouse mate hit the ground, like, okay, feet first, but he just collapsed, hit the ground, and he bounced literally about 20 meters and then landed again. And we're just running after them, trying to collapse their chutes. It was, a lot of people were injured. It wasn't good, but, you know, afterwards in the bar, it was quite funny. So that's all right. But it was rough, man. That was rough. And I've sort of remembered, you know, drop your kit and try and untwist, and you just about land, because that's right, they dropped us from 600 or 700 feet in the aircraft, so you even if something went wrong, you wouldn't even have time to pull your reserve. So it's back to the Arnhem days when they used to jump without reserves, which is a bit scary. 600 or 700 feet unofficially it was.
Well, they didn't carry a reserve because they dropped so low tactically, the reserve,
it didn't matter,
wouldn't have time to open.
I wouldn't like to do that.
My funny dip there is these two army guys that were on my course, these two nine commando guys, they were really funny. One of them, I think his name was Colin, I can't remember, but he was telling us his story in the NAFI one night, the NAFI being the bar, about his action man. And he's like, when I was a kid, I used to put a parachute on my action man. I used to make it out of a carrier bag and just tie some strings to it. He said, in one day, he said, I chucked him out the bedroom window and I ran down the stairs into the street. And he said, Action Man's all just smashed up on the pavement, you know, his black eye, his arms broken off, his legs are all bent. And we're like, what happened? He said, didn't put his reserve.
I knew it was coming, but it was still funny.
But there's more. So, as I said, I always made sure I was the first man out the hook.
Yeah,
and I'm stood in the doorway, and it's like
beautiful,
you know,
looking around.
Yeah, and it's like red on, and that means like you the green's
get ready
come any second, and you just got to go. And I heard this shout, Chris, and I looked round, and it's Colin, and he sat there grinning, and he went, remember my Action Man.
I love it. Yes. That's just, I love that humor, right? Mm. There was one time, and I you know, you can call us unprofessional, but there was a few of us on the squadron. We were doing a jump, we were going on to an exercise for a week, so all the really keen troopers in our squadron, A flight, and the lads from two squadron will remember this. Well, instead of going back to barracks and getting our heads down, there was a bunch of us that got nicknamed the dregs on the squadron, the sort of the party animals or whatever. Instead of going and getting ready and getting our kit ready and preparing for exercise, for a week's exercise, 2 weeks exercise, and getting your head down, get some sleep, because we were going to Bry's about 2 o'clock, 4 in the morning. For a 4 o'clock in a.m. jump, we went down to the local pub downtown, the Black Horse, and got absolutely rat-arsed. And we were literally, when we got to Bry's, we were holding one of our mates up on parade. We were holding him up because he was so pissed. And when they did the roll call, we had to call his name for him, and we managed to all get on the aircraft. But the aircraft must have stank. We must have got some other people drunk. And we sobered up very quickly after the jump. And then we had to do the 10-mile tab, which was pretty painful. But that's how fit you are back then, right?
Yeah.
You could actually do that shit. Exactly. That's quite incredible. Yeah.
Graham, listen, yeah. I am literally in 10 minutes time talking to SAS legend Colin McLaughlin of
Good Stuff
Television's Who Dares Wins, SAS Who Dares Wins fame.
Scottish, I take it.
Plus, Scottish guy, very nice man. Plus, that's just the TV bit is a tiny bit.
Sure.
What he does and has done, he's an incredible guy.
All right, mate, let's wrap it up.
I will say goodbye. We're going to talk next time about skydiving, which is just even more fun again, right?
100 times better.
So, and we're also going to talk about your story in Sarajevo.
Sure, that'd be awesome. Yeah, I bring a friend on if I can.
Because I've got to talk quickly now, but Graham was a volunteer aid worker in the Bosnian conflict, driving trucks full of food to the children in the orphanages, getting shot at, bombed, taken hostage. It's an incredible story. I can't wait to really, I've been looking forward to this one. So
me too. Right,
I will wish you and yours lots of love, mate. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Massive love to everybody at home. Please.
Likewise, brother.
Yeah. If you could like and subscribe, friends, that would be really kind. Just helps me to keep doing this. And I'll see you next time.
Friends, thank you for listening to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. Please like, subscribe and share. And don't forget to follow me on social media. Username, Chris Thrall. Instagram, Chris.Thrall. Thank you.